Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK, sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV, whatever it may be. It's all at Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. Customer service means everything to them, which means they're trying everything they can to make you sure you're fully covered and save you money. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online, sunburymotors.com. Go up to Scranton now and talk with Donnie Collins. Donnie, first of all, welcome back. Thanks so much for your time today and a busy Monday.
Oh, yeah, it's a very busy Monday, but any time for you, Steve.
Appreciate it very much, Donnie. Okay. So the primary topic of the press conference, for obvious reasons, is what happened with Mike Yurcich. In the end, were you surprised by the move, or is it more the timing of the move?
Yeah, I don't know if I was surprised by the move. I wouldn't have bet that it would happen during the season just because James has never made that kind of a move during the season. But I think there were some clear signs the last couple of weeks that this was not going to work out with Yurcich over the long term. And James, after the game on Saturday, when a head coach says, you know, we have to create some easy throws that every team does, that's not a good sign for the offensive coordinator, because it's obvious that that's really what this offense is missing. Some of those bread and butter plays in the passing game where you're going to get 5-6 yards and get yourself on schedule, get all those things that you want as an offense, get yourself moving, get your quarterback in the rhythm and all that. But yeah, and I agreed with James on that, but I didn't wake up Sunday thinking they were gonna let go of Yurcich, because that hadn't happened before. But to a degree, it's a bold move in the sense that if you know you got to make it, you make it now and you get yourself in the market. But you also put yourself in the crosshairs for a couple of weeks here, because look, you have now let go of three offensive coordinators in your tenure, and the next hire probably is going to be somebody that everybody's got to be really happy with, and it's got to be a home run hire. So I think a lot of pressure put on James, but I also in that regard don't believe James looks at it, or I don't think he shies away from the pressure of making a big hire. I mean, Manny Diaz was one, Yurcich was one, so I think he's got the courage of his convictions. But moving forward, I think this next one's got to be a good one for him.
Right. I know. I felt Penn State actually ran the ball well on Saturday against Michigan.
Yeah.
Yet when you look at the first down mix, and the first down mix was fine in terms of the number of yards they gained, but it is unusual when you have 22 first down plays in a game you didn't win, and 19 of the 22 are runs. Do you think that factors into the you have to have some easier throws in there for your quarterback, especially early?
Yeah, I totally think that. At one point during the game, it's funny you mentioned it, because I forgot I did this and all the excitement, but at one point in the game, I turned to Frank Bodani, who was next to me. I know you've had him on the show a lot. But I said to Frank, how often have they thrown on first down? And at that point in the game, it was two. And I think the third one came pretty late, and it might have been the last drive where where they had some desperation to them. But they were really and again, you can't argue it, because they were running it well enough. I mean, they were doing their job in that fast of the game. So if it's not broke, why change it? And they were, I didn't think they were necessarily off schedule as they were in other games. Definitely in the Ohio State game, they were third and long all the time. But they were running the ball well enough. So I didn't think it was that big a deal. But I did before the game say, hey, look, first play here, run your safest pass play. Get yourself 5-6 yards, get going. And they ran it. And you didn't see that safe pass play. So I think you're right. I think when you look at the mix, when it's 19-3, that's no faith in the pass game. And I don't know if this is the offensive coordinator, you can have no faith in the pass game. You have to have those couple of plays that are going to work and move yourself down the field. Or at least, you know, the whole rhythm thing with Drew, it's a big thing. You know, when he gets out of rhythm, mm-hmm. he's not the same player. But when he's in rhythm, he's terrific. So you got to get him going. And I don't think in either of the two losses Penn State did. And the obvious response to that is, well, they lost to two of the best three or four teams in the country and two of the three or four best defenses in the country, and I get that. But you still have to figure out a way. There's got to be somewhere where you can compete in that area and make sure your offense is giving itself a chance. And I'm not sure running it 19 times, even running it well, mm-hmm. is the way to go there against a good team.
To me, the key sequence in the game, and you may disagree with this, and I know they ran it 32 straight times. And with that quarterback, you're always worried he's going to play action. You can't just put 11 guys in the box because this guy's going to can play action it. And he's really good at it at 84%. But to me, the key sequence was you score at the end of the first half, and we could debate the extra point thing, but that, you know, that's fine. But you score at the end of the half, you have some momentum, and you're going to get the ball to start the second half. And you're 6 of 9 on the season entering the game, scoring on your first drive of the second half with 5 touchdowns and a field goal. And you get a first down, and then you get another first down, but that's when Drew fumbles the ball in getting that first down. They recovered. Now, I know it turns out to be 3, but they took forever to get down the field to do it, and they ate the clock and got 3 points. To me, that was the sequence between the two.
Yeah, I thought there was 2 sequences in the game, and that was certainly one of them. Where, and I don't know about you, I had a feeling they were going to score. I thought they figured something out. They came out pretty aggressive there, and I thought at that point, they're looking pretty good here. It was 14-9 at that point.
Yes.
Even if they get 3,
right,
you're feeling pretty good about it if you're Penn State. So I thought that was a huge play. But James is right. You know, you're leaving points on the field. You have to be able to. You know, points are going to be at a premium in that game. And I think even with Michigan scoring 24, that's evidence that points are at a premium because they're averaging over 40. So yeah, I thought that was a big sequence, and I thought not being able to punch it in first and goal from the 3.
Agreed.
In the first quarter was huge. I thought at that point that there was going to be some trouble there because, again, points at a premium, but you can't. I mean, that's a big swing there in the second half. Start, you know, with Drew putting the ball, you know, on the ground. The Michigan player made a good play, went after the ball.
Yes, he
that
did.
We should have done. But
yeah.
You know, you look at it as probably a 10-point swing at best because, you know, Penn State maybe goes in and scores a touchdown there. You get 7, and you end up giving up 3 off of that. And the way Michigan plays, they play like Illinois did a couple of years ago, where they're just going to run it every time, mm-hmm. and they're going to wind the clock down. They're going to take, like you said, take forever. They're just the opportunities in that game just weren't going to be there to score very often, to come back and to get into a rhythm. So I thought it was huge there to fumble when you had a rhythm. That was pretty much, I thought, that was the moment, I think, you know, when I started writing the column, because I thought this is probably this is probably going to be hard to come back from.
Right, I agree with that. And again, the ability of McCarthy to be a play action passer and be so good at it, or to tuck it down himself and run, that keeps you a little off balance. Well, why don't you throw 11 in the box? Because with this guy, you can't throw 11 in the box. You don't know what he's going to do with it. Illinois, in the 9 overtime game, did not have a guy that could throw the ball, not even in the same realm as this guy. And I think that played a role. And I think Michigan was smart. Their defense is playing well, so let's chew yards and clock.
Yeah, Michigan did considering they didn't have their head coach, I thought Michigan played a very smart, calm, mm-hmm. and collected game. And, you know, and you could do that with McCarthy because, I mean, it's weird because he was 7 for 8 for like 60 yards. And I mm-hmm. was actually even a little more convinced that he should be in the Heisman race after that because I thought he kind of controlled the game because you have to honor him. Even if you're running Corum and Donovan Edwards all the time, you have to still honor McCarthy. So I thought that was he was a big factor in that game, and you're right. They, you know, Michigan, I thought, you know, there were some moments I think Penn State was chasing points. And again, we could debate the two-point conversions and all that. But I thought that the coaching staff played a little bit differently than they're usually doing as Penn State. And Michigan, really, even without Harbaugh, was pretty set in what they were going to do, and they just executed the game plan. And I think that, you know, I don't think that was lost on anybody on Penn State's sideline after the game.
It's interesting. I was talking with Rich Scarcella, and he told me he was going through the parking lot, and people were asking, you know, do you think they can hang with this team? Do you think they can hang with him? Well, now they lose to Ohio State by 8, lost the game on the road, didn't win. They lose this game by 9 at home, didn't win. In reality, as now you've watched this out, how big is the gap between Penn State and those two? Is it large? Is it small? Is it a couple of plays? What is it in your mind?
I don't know. I think it looks bigger than it really is. And you look at it, they're within one possession the entire game of Ohio State. Mm-hmm. And I think there was times, my criticism of them was they played like they were maybe two possessions behind at times against Ohio State, and you know, they should have punted at one point and all that. And so I think it is, and I think it was pretty much the same with Michigan. I never thought they were uncompetitive in that game. I thought actually I thought for most of the day they were pretty even. So you know, I didn't think they even did a bad job stopping the run. I mean, you're going to give up 200 yards when they're running the ball that much. So I didn't think that some of the things that have hurt them in the past against Michigan hurt them in this game. But, you know, is there a gap? Yes. And I think the fact that there is a gap is significant. And some of that gap is probably a mental gap, too. And it's not just the players. It's the coaches. And it's a lot of things that shouldn't, you know, maybe be there. But they're there but they show up when you lose year after year after year to the same teams, and I think it starts to manifest itself. And look, I think talent wise, Penn State's there. I think they are maybe a cut behind Ohio State on offense. Maybe I think style wise, they're different than Michigan. And what Michigan's doing well right now, and what's making them successful, is that their style is a little bit different, and they've got the quarterback right now who could run their offense the way Harbaugh wants, and Corum is a good back. But you know, I think any given year, look, I mean, they're winning 10 games a year. They can't be that bad. This can't be a, you know, I you hear the questions coming through. Oh, what do you think today? I think it'll be a good game. Oh, I don't know. It's got to be a good game. It was a good game against Ohio State. They were in it. They didn't play very well, but they were in it. I thought they played a little better this time. And if you take the fumble out of it, who knows? So I think they're close, but they're not there. The question I would what I debate here with myself is, are they closer to being the fifth best team in next year's Big Ten or the sixth best team than they are to being the second best team? And that's, I think, I don't have the answer to that, but I think that's kind of a concern I would have, because once, you know, Washington, USC, UCLA, whoever comes in, little different conference. So this was probably their chance to get to position themselves for next year to be one of the big three. But I think right now they're the third. And that's not good enough. James has said it a million times. Not good enough for them. Certainly not good enough for them. Certainly not good enough for the fans. But it is what it is at this point. And I don't, you know, I think there's a gap, and the size of that gap is hard to define. But I think it's a pretty good one mentally.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting when the four West Coast teams come in, for a couple of reasons. Number one, they're big names, and have had great performances. But they're also coming in, and three of the four are going to have new quarterbacks. Because there will be no Bo Nix, no Michael Penix, and in all likelihood, no Caleb Williams. So I don't really know how good they're going to be next year, because they're going to have new quarterbacks.
Yeah, and that's the big key. It's the great equalizer is the quarterback. And who knows? It could be anybody. because there's free agency, basically.
Sure.
But yeah, if you look at – I happen to be looking at Oregon's roster from – a couple of years ago, just to see some offensive stats for them, and obviously the reason why, but you know, I didn't know half of their players. I don't watch Oregon every week, so you're looking at the quarterback was Anthony Brown, I think. He was a good player, but he's certainly not Bo Nix. You know, and Penix is, you know, I thought Penix was a really good player at Indiana, and he's, you put him around a better talent at Washington, and you put him on the turf, that's a really good quarterback there. So, but they do lose those guys, and who knows who they get. But, every season's going to look so different now, thanks to the portal and things like that. But the thing that doesn't look different is Ohio State's at the top, Michigan's there, and could you get to that level? But you would hope, if you're Penn State, that you can prove that you're better than the four guys coming in. Because if you're better than those four guys, you still give yourself a chance at that tournament. Mm-hmm.
And we don't know what Michigan's going to look like next year. With everything that's gone on there, and McCarthy may be an NFL draft guy. He's in his third year now. So we don't know what they're going to look like next year, to be honest.
Yeah, they're not going to have those two guards, the 77, Zinser and Keegan, are really good players. I think they're able to get to the second level pretty quick. They'll be gone. Corum's gone. Donovan Edwards, I believe, is gone. McCarthy could go. So you don't know what Michigan is going to be. But Harbaugh, I guess it's kind of likely Harbaugh won't be there next year. It changes every year. But when you look at it in the now, I think that's when it seems bleaker. And it seems like Penn State's in this precarious position where the losses mean a little more than the wins right now, and they have to figure out a way to change that going forward. And once you win one of those games against one of those teams, you're good. But the problem next year is they don't play Michigan.
Right.
When it comes to the offensive coordinator hire, whenever it does happen, how interested are you going to be in the style of offense that he has a reputation for running, considering how Drew plays the game and how Bo Perbula plays the game?
Yeah, I think that's the entire key. I can't imagine. I like to follow a lot of these guys, all these new offenses that you see. The UNLV offense, for instance, is one that I was watching, and I know that's a guy. He's a Pittsburgh guy, the guy running that offense, and it's neat. They do a lot of fun things, and it's interesting. But you start to think, is that going to work in the Big Ten if they do something like that? So I would tend to think that James is going to go with somebody who kind of does what they currently do, only better. And I think that's really the goal, right? I mean, it's always the goal, because that fits your personnel. And even in the transfer portal area, most of your personnel is coming back every year. So you want to bring in somebody who could play a style that's going to benefit Drew Allen, or who's going to benefit Bo Perbula in a year. It's going to work Nick Singleton and Katron Allen in, because you're hoping you have all those guys. And someone who could develop receivers, scheme them open, things like that. And most importantly, someone who players are going to want to play for. So I think, I don't think it's going to be someone totally dissimilar from Mike Yurcich. And I don't think it's going to be something totally dissimilar from what Franklin has always said he wants to do. It's not going to be some kind of crazy new scheme coming in. But, that said, there are guys out there who have run, who have worked for James and done his system before. So I think, sometimes I think that's overvalued. You see these lists of guys' names. Here's possible candidates, and nobody really knows, because James didn't tell them. So nobody really knows who's being looked at. And I'd be very surprised if anybody was being looked at right now, unless James has a candidate that he knows he's bringing in. But I think this is a year that I might put a little more stock in that, because I think it's got to be a hire that the fans are going to like. I don't know if it has to be, but I think it would help, and I think it would be somebody with some familiarity with what they do who could come in and, I guess, take them to another level, or a level they've been at in the past.
Donnie, great conversation as always. Thanks so much for giving us the time today. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks, Steve.
Donnie Collins, Scranton Times Tribune. John Griffin, next half hour. Great to have you with us today. Brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, we're going to shift gears to Bucknell basketball because, as usual on Monday, we have John Griffin, the head coach of Bucknell, on the show. Talk to John for about maybe 10 minutes or so and get his feel on the team and what he has seen so far, and then we'll listen to what you have to say. You may have some questions and comments you want to make as well, and we want to make sure we get that in. Neil Coulon tomorrow. We'll work on Mark Wogenrich and Frank Bodani for later in the week. All right, and then we'll get to Zach Showers on Thursday at Sealands Grove, which is not a surprise. It's still the one standing in our area in the playoffs. All right. A lot going on. Penn State Rutgers Saturday noon. We're on beginning at 10:30 on Eagle 107. Great to have you with us today. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, RV, motorcycle. They'll do everything they can to make sure you're fully insured and also save you money. Could be bundles. Could be, in certain cases, you can go over state lines. They'll do it. Customer service means everything to them at Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Right. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 to 15, Elmhurst Wharf online. SunburyMotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee and a terrific service department that makes a difference in every way, shape, and form. From routine to difficult, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 to 15, Hummels Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. And today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV, whatever it may be. They want to make sure you're fully insured. Customer service means everything to them. And they want to save you money. Pros, great people. All at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Caleb, do we have John yet?
Yes, we do.
John, welcome back to the show. Congratulations on your first win as the head coach.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you for having me on, and I appreciate that.
What did it mean to you? I know, look, there's a long career in front of you. I have that. But there's always a first. What did it mean to you?
I mean, obviously, being the son of a coach, my whole life has kind of been, well, at least the emotions on a daily basis centered around winning basketball games. And so it was a special moment to share with the team who've really been working extremely hard, the staff who lives and dies with every shot, mm-hmm. every turnover, every assist, every rebound. Just sharing the win with people that have really impacted my life, both on and off the court, and just letting them know I'm appreciative for them, what they've done for me as a person throughout the course of my life. And, yeah, of course, I tried to enjoy it. I certainly did. Like I said, being the son of a coach, Steve, I've learned that winning is hard.
Oh.
And enjoy it when it happens. So I let it sink in. I had a great time celebrating in that intimate moment with the team in the locker room after our win. And then we got on the bus, drove back, and now we're preparing for our next yep. opportunity.
LaSalle tomorrow.
Yes.
So let's get Noah Williamson. He clocks in 26 minutes for you. This guy gets 22 yeah. points in 26 minutes and 11 boards to go with it.
Yeah.
What did you see in him, but also from his teammates, what did you see in their ability to put him in the right spot to score?
Well, he is a very skilled European big man. And we learned a lot from our first two games, Delaware and Penn, about just being more efficient on offense, and we really worked on
within the framework of what we do offensively, finding him when he's open. And we missed him a bunch in the first two games. And I thought that our guards, when they were using either a triple handoff or a pick and roll, really looked for him, found him. And to his credit, you know, statistically, he's had two tough games to start his sophomore campaign. And as a staff, we work with him on his development and its maturity along with the skills. So he did a great job of handling the first two games and what he would probably tell you is a disappointing performance from a production standpoint, even though he's playing really hard. And it was nice to see him finish some of these shots around the basket.
No question. Josh Basco comes off the bench on a night or a day where you're 4 of 15 in threes. He had three of them. What did it do to open up the floor for you, John, that he was able to get you on track from that spot?
Well, we have two very dynamic ball handlers, and they're 6 foot and under 6 foot, and I'm not afraid to put them on the floor together because they can create a lot of offensive opportunities for the rest of the guys on the floor without necessarily a play call. And Josh is a guy that has historically made shots throughout the course of his first 2 years. His minutes have been inconsistent, but through practice, I mean, we stat everything, and he's been one of our better shot makers. And he's trying to balance, I think, being a player that provides opportunities for others with assists and being aggressive as a scorer himself. And we needed him to look at the rim, and he's very confident in himself. And, you know, those three threes were very important for us. They were came in very timely points in the basketball game.
You talked about playing two point guards. You'll play them out there sometimes, John, at the same time. What does it mean to the wear and tear on legs that you can then get one to take it up a few times, the other one to take up a few times? What does that mean long-term at that position?
Well, we're playing a lot of games in the month of November. I think I would say probably the average Division I program plays around six or seven in December. We're playing nine. And that's just the way that the scheduling calendar worked itself out. So for us, having, like you just mentioned, two players that can comfortably bring the ball up against any pressure is really an advantage for us. They're quick, they're heady, and they're really capable with the ball in their hands making decisions, and I trust them. So certainly it does give a little rest where rest would be needed, but at the same time, it gives us a little bit of a dynamic two ball handler lineup that can get in the paint, and that's a big emphasis for us on offense. It helps us with our spacing, and it helps get towards the rim.
When Elvin Edmonds was out there, what kind of job did he do controlling the flow of the game for you?
Yeah, it was a big moment for Elvin. He made big plays for us in the last 10 minutes. Niagara, historically, the Gallagher Center, and I know this, and your partner Dick Girardi would speak to this as well, has a long Philadelphia connection because of Coach Mihalik's time and his success up there. So winning at Niagara, at the Gallagher Center, has always been tough. I spent time at Ryder and in the MAC Conference. There's this Buffalo road trip swing that you hope to go 1-1 when you make that swing. And I thought Elvin stepped up to the plate. He was very poised. And when his opportunities presented themselves, he made the right decision. And he was very aggressive, and he was very assertive, and we need that. And like I said, that combination of those two guards really gives us a dynamic playmaking offensive five-person group that under 8 minutes, Steve, a lot of times play calling is not as important as playmaking and then the decisions that come from the playmaking.
No question. All right, so this is part of this Duke Classic you're playing in. It's going to be an interesting week that the most experienced coach you'll face will be the LaSalle coach, because that's Fran Dunphy. I know you have a lot of respect for Fran as to what he does. What are some concepts, just from a pure coaching point of view, that you've looked at Fran Dunphy, especially in the offensive end, that you know a lot of coaches like and admire?
Well, first of all, Fran Dunphy is one of the best human beings, regardless of being a basketball coach, that I've ever met in my life.
Yep.
After we won against Niagara, one of the first 10 text messages came from Fran Dunphy. He's been a great mentor. My father and Coach Dunphy have coached with and against each other for so long, and him, like Speedy Morris, are just two really influential people in my life. Mm-hmm. And so what I can tell you about Coach Dunphy's teams are, one, offensively, they're going to play with confidence, with a bit of freedom, and the most productive players will have the most opportunities. And then as a whole, he preaches just being an unbelievable competitor. And throughout the course of his coaching career, his teams have been fearless. They've been underdogs and overcome the odds, and they've been connected. And I think that's something that, as I have observed him throughout the course of my life, I've taken from him and tried to use it here at Bucknell or wherever I've been as an assistant. But he's an amazing person. He's impacted so many lives in a positive way, and I really do feel honored to be on the sideline across from it. It is a bit surreal, being that he's been such a mentor for so many years.
So let me ask you this, John. I'll close with this, because you're going to play a Gola coming up tomorrow. When you have quick turnarounds with 9 games in November, you have to. 2 days, Delaware Penn. 3 days to Niagara. 3 days to LaSalle. 3 days to Duke. 3 days to Southern Indiana. 2 days to St. Bonaventure. 3 days after that, Marist. How do you like to handle the time between games when it is condensed, as to how much on-floor work and how much video work you get?
Yeah, we do. We probably split it. We may even tend to spend a little bit more time with film, and maybe that's just me because of my background. I was a video coordinator to start in this industry, and I've seen how that can have such an impact from a teaching perspective on players individually. But, you know, interestingly, the program right now, from a scheduling standpoint, is designed to prepare us for March.
Yep.
You know, once you hit the conference season, the games are structured according to what the conference calendar looks like.
Mm-hmm.
These non-conference scheduling, 9 maybe is one too many in November. However, when you hit March, you have, and you get to the NCAA tournament, you have 1 day preparation, maybe 2 or 3, from the selection show to the first game.
Right.
And it's a lot of chaos and media, so there's a lot of distractions. And so we're just trying to teach this group the mentality and the process required, the approach required to prepare mentally and physically. And it's been great for us. I mean, we're learning quite a bit about our group. I'm really proud of the competitive nature that our group has put on display. We had a couple, the first two halves, Delaware and Penn, were a bit rough. But we navigated that and put forth a better effort in the second half. And then, you know, we played a little bit more of a full body against Niagara. And so, to your question, we split it up, and we want to make sure this group is properly prepared as we go into the January, February, March months.
Yeah, Eric Spoelstra started in video, would have given the same answer you did. So,
he's made this idea of a video coordinator very popular. It is not as fun as it sounds, let me tell you.
No. You're not watching Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. You're breaking down basketball.
I've seen every brand of basketball imaginable, and I do feel like I am ahead as it relates to head coaches and technology from my experience as a video coordinator. I mean, the video stuff is very natural to me, and I really find it to be very important, the technology side of the coaching industry.
Well, that was the first of many in your career, Bucknell, and I congratulate you on it. I'm thrilled for you. I know right back to the grind with LaSalle, and I wish you best of luck with LaSalle and eventually with Duke this week.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it.
Thanks, John. John Griffin, head basketball coach, Bucknell, won over Niagara, and now they get LaSalle down at Gola coming up tomorrow night. We'll come back with more in a moment and close out brought to you by Purdy Insurance here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you with us on the show today, brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Thanks to Donnie Collins, Scranton Times Tribune, Rich Scarsella, Reading Eagle, and Bucknell basketball coach John Griffin. Tomorrow we have scheduled Neil Coulong, and then I'm going to talk to our guys about scheduling maybe a Frank Bodani or Mark Wogenrich maybe for Wednesday. See if we can get them on Wednesday's show. So we'll do that. There's going to be a court hearing Friday for Michigan, and Jim Harbaugh is going to attend the court hearing on Friday. Michigan does play on the road. They play at Maryland this week. So he did talk to the media today about it. Yeah, he has his weekly press conference like he always does. So he ended up staying. The team stayed at the Wyndham near the I still call it the Elks. What the heck? The country club. Mountain View. That's where they stay, Mountain View Country Club. And so his family was with him, and they watched the game there. So that's where he was. And that's where they are with it. It's, if you notice on the broadcast on Saturday, Jack Ham and I never once mentioned his name. And here's the reason why. Which coaches' names do we mention during the broadcast? I mean, who? You know, when Ryan Day's, we didn't really mention Ryan Day, and rarely mentioned Jim Tressel. You know, you do enough games, you know, you might mention a name. I mean, have I ever mentioned Jim Harbaugh's name on the broadcast before? Sure, because when you've done as many games, at some point, it gets mentioned. And there's some days you don't. You know, I mean, I don't think I mentioned Mike Loxley's name one time in the Maryland broadcast. It was was no need. It didn't fit. And we just didn't mention it on the broadcast, because after a while it became such a sideshow. It was time for the game, and I wanted to just do the game, and it wasn't deliberate. It's just the way it worked out. He wasn't there, and I never really thought too much about him not being there. He wasn't there for the first three games either. What are they, 10-0 now? He's coached six of them, and four of them he has not been on the sideline. Okay. But it just never came up, and nobody asked in the pregame show, which is perfectly fine. Nobody asked. Okay. And like I said, going into it, it wasn't really, you know. After a while, doesn't the game become the deal? I mean, I know we've done a lot of talking about coaching since the game, James And, of course, with Mike Yurcich no longer being there as the offensive coordinator, now Jaywan Sider and Ty Howell taking over as the play-calling part. They already had the titles to begin with. They're just now going to take care of that end of it. You know, it just didn't come up. We're not a TV show. So, college football, college basketball in particular, are TV shows. So, and it was interesting that one of the guys from NBC was talking to me today about a feature they did with Kaylee Hartung, who does Prime Video Sideline. And Harry Smith knows her. We were talking about, Harry and I were talking about this, and about all the stuff that she has. She had like 22 different items one night as she kind of took everybody behind the scenes of what she does. And she only got to one of them. Yeah. And that's just the way, the nature of it. So sometimes you don't get around to something. And I felt like at that, in the pregame show especially, it was, to us it was about the game, and about matchups. The sideshow had been covered by everybody else all week. And it's a sideshow. So now we'll see how this plays out. The hearing is on Friday. And we'll find out what they're going to do. Mississippi State fired their coach. Boise State fired their coach. And Jimbo Fisher got fired at Texas A&M. I'm going to talk a little bit about that tomorrow. About the quick fix.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.